Welcome to All Sides with Anna Staver. I'm Amy Jurevich, in for Anna today. Attorney General Dave Yost is suing Columbus City Schools. Yost says that the district broke the law when it didn't drive about 1,000 private and charter school students to class. Columbus says busing those kids is impractical, and therefore it's not legally required to do so. It's the latest legal twist in a fight over who drives our kids to school. Ohio Public Radio Statehouse Bureau Chief Karen Kassler is following the lawsuit, and she joins me now. Welcome, Karen.
Hey, good morning.
So let's start with the basics, Karen. The state of Ohio requires public schools to drive private and charter school students to class if they meet certain criteria. Do you know those qualifications?
Well, it depends. And that's one of the things at issue here with the Columbus lawsuit, because the city of Columbus is facing a serious bus driver shortage, as are many school districts around the country and in Ohio. And so the city of Columbus, Columbus City Schools,
right,
created a group of six factors that could determine whether a student was eligible for transportation. Because like you said, state law says that students who live in the district have to be transported by that public school district, either to their public school or to a non-public school, a private school, religious school, charter school, whatever. Mm-hmm. And so faced with this bus driver shortage and the number of kids who needed to go to all sorts of different buildings now, the district came up with these six criteria and then judged kids based on whether they meet this criteria if they are eligible for transportation.
Some examples of those criteria is that they must live more than 2 miles from the school to qualify for a bus. So if it's walking distance, you walk. And the drive should be 30 minutes or less. Right. And if you go to a chartered or non-public school, we're in a school choice state, right? Ohio
right.
has school choice. So parents can make that decision. They don't have to send their kid to the school closest to them.
And that's another factor that's involved here. I mean, you've got these six criteria that the district came up with. And for instance, another criteria is the number of pupils who are to be transported, the cost of providing that transportation. These are all factors that Columbus City Schools use to determine eligibility. But you've got the increase in vouchers. Vouchers are now universal. Mm-hmm. Basically, any family who wants a voucher can get a voucher to send their child to private school and or non-public school. And so you've got a lot of families that are taking advantage of that. And so what happened in Columbus is that they had 39,000 kids that they were trying to transport, 37,000 kids they were trying to transport mm-hmm. to 113 Columbus City Schools buildings and around 167 non-public private charter school buildings.
Right.
So a big increase in the number of buildings that are not part of the regular Columbus City Schools route that had to be factored into those routes. And so that, coupled with a shortage of bus drivers, made it so that the district decided we're going to come up with these criteria and certain students are just not going to be eligible for transportation. That number, according to the lawsuit, is about 1,380 kids.
Now, Attorney General Dave Yost says that the Columbus City Schools deciding that these 1,300 kids are, the school decided they were impractical to transport, but Yost is saying, no, you need to.
Right. And they say that they came up with this list, these six criteria for determining eligibility for transportation based on state law. Mm-hmm. They said they looked at state law and they decided to use some of the tools that are provided in state law. State law does require that public schools transport kids to non-public schools, but state law also gives them these tools, Columbus City School says, to come up with criteria that determine whether a child is eligible for transportation or not. So they say they're within the law as it relates to these particular factors. But of course, Yost says the law requires them to transport these kids regardless, essentially.
Right. And Columbus, for example, Columbus City Schools says some of these kids that they sent the letters to and said, we're not going to bus you, you are more than 30 minute drive away. So it's impractical for us to bus you. And Columbus City Schools, I saw a quote somewhere that they have not used that part of the law before. They have bus students that were further away, more than 30 minutes. But this year, they just deemed it impractical that they couldn't. So they decided to use that part of the law on their behalf, right?
Yeah. I mean, the district has been in such a state with its bus driver shortage that it's had to use other things. And when I talked to Columbus City Schools about the bus driver shortage, I was doing a larger piece about the bus driver shortage in Ohio. I've been following this for about 4 years now, because that's really when the bus driver shortage started to show up, right around the time kids were going back to schools that were reopening after COVID. You had a lot of bus driver retirements. You had a lot of people who wanted to drive for a living, who didn't have to drive a bus. They could drive for UPS or Amazon or delivery services, whatever. So they were having trouble hiring people, especially when the job is so safety intensive. You have to transport kids to school. It's a lot. And the schedule is a little weird for some people. Some people don't want to work early morning and late afternoon.
That split shift, man. Yeah.
And so they were having trouble hiring enough bus drivers. And so they have, Columbus City Schools has a little over half of the number of bus drivers now than they had 4 years ago. So it's really hard to keep up transporting all the kids that you were transporting 4 years ago when you've got these additional pressures, such as more non-city school buildings that these students are being sent to.
And part of what Yost is saying in his lawsuit against Columbus City Schools is that the schools didn't tell the parents with enough time, right? I mean, the school was required to tell them, is it 30 days ahead of time? I can't remember now.
Yeah, the timeline issue is, I think, something that has been discussed here. And you know, the Columbus City Schools had a whole, they've got a page on their site that really details their response to Yost's lawsuit. And they mentioned the timeline in that. They also mentioned that some of these families are being reimbursed because the state does pay these public schools to transport kids. And so families are being reimbursed in some cases if they are the ones that are required to get their kids to school. Now, Yost says in the lawsuit that that reimbursement is not going to come till the end of the year. So that's a burden.
Right.
And certain families, they don't want to put their kids on public transit, or they have to rearrange their schedules, or maybe even change jobs because they have to incorporate getting their kids to school into their day. And so, yeah, the timing issue is a question here of when students, when parents were notified that their students weren't going to be transported, and if parents are going to be compensated, when would that compensation come about?
Right. And Columbus City Schools is also saying that some of the private schools didn't tell them with enough time, like, hey, we have this kid going here. You need to bus them. Here's their name and address and go. And Columbus said, you're past the deadline.
Yeah. And these deadlines are really important because school districts have to plan their routes before school starts. They have
obviously
to try to figure out. I mean, the final count, I think, doesn't come down until next month in terms of how many students a school district has to really bus and move around. But they have to try to figure out how to get these kids, all these kids they're obligated to transport, to the buildings they're obligated to transport them to. And so this involves, you know, software programs and bringing in all sorts of planning materials and of course, hiring people. If you have a bus driver shortage, like, again, most school districts do, you have to bring in contractors. You have to try to find people on the staff who have CDLs who can drive. Right. You have to start training up other bus drivers or other people in the system to try to get them on the bus as soon as possible. And it takes like 6 weeks before someone is able to even get into a bus when they're on the when they're doing the training and doing the safety drills to become a bus driver. So it takes time.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, Attorney General Dave Yost is suing Columbus City Schools, but it's kind of, is he opening a bigger can of worms for the state of this bus driver shortage? Like, does the state need to address this?
Oh, absolutely. I think when I've talked to the folks that I've talked to over the last couple of years about the bus driver shortage, they've said that there needs to be a more holistic solution, that everybody, the district, the parents, the lawmakers who fund all this, need to come together and figure out how to solve this, because this bus driver shortage is not going away. There are these factors still continue. The people who've retired have not been replaced. People are retiring all the time. The competition from commercial driving services and then the addition of vouchers here. And that's one of the things that Yost says in his lawsuit. He's suggesting that the district is trying to force those kids who are receiving vouchers to come back to the city schools. And that adds a whole other level here, because certainly public schools are very concerned about the use of vouchers and where that money comes from compared to whether it's going to public schools. So that adds a whole other level to this.
Yes. So We're a school choice state, and Ohio lawmakers have decided that you can pick what school your kids go to. You don't have to send them to the school, whether it's down the street or, you know, 1 mile away, 2 miles away. You don't have to send them to the public school.
And you can get state assistance to send those kids to another school. The voucher size does vary based on your income. But yeah, anybody who wants a voucher, a taxpayer paid voucher to send their kid to a non-public school can get one.
But it opens the question of, should the district be required to, if you make that choice and you get this voucher to send your kid and you pick a school that's 23 minutes away, should the public school district be required to bus them?
And I think that that is a big
question. Do you know the answer, Karen?
I'm like,
Karen knows the answer. Yes.
I think that's a big question here. I think that that is part of this whole discussion is, what do we do? I think a lot of parents just take for granted that the bus is going to be there. It's going to pick up my kids. They're going to take my kids to school. It's going to bring them home and everything will be fine. But now we're in a circumstance where that's not always the case, because your kid is going to a non-public school or there's fewer bus drivers or whatever's happening. It makes it more difficult to rely on that. And so the conversation, according to the Ohio School Boards Association and other people who are looking into this, the conversation has to be about, how do we make sure that we can get kids to school safely when we have fewer drivers and more places that those kids are going to?
So where does the lawsuit stand? Because we asked Columbus City Schools and the Attorney General's office to be on the show today, but they're in an active lawsuit. They both declined to talk about it. What happens next?
The lawsuit was filed in the Ohio Supreme Court, and so it's not moved forward yet. It was just filed a week or so ago. So there's obviously all the court things that go on now and the filings and all that. But this is definitely a case to watch, in my opinion, because even if there's a settlement here, I feel like that issue of, what do we do to make sure that kids get to school safely when there are fewer bus drivers and more places that they're going, how do we resolve that question? And I think that's what school districts have said throughout this bus driver shortage. We have to address this and figure it out before school starts, ideally. You know, this kind of came forward as school was beginning. And the time to resolve some of these things is before you get into that crisis situation.
And I feel like I might have read somewhere, I don't even know if this relates to Columbus City Schools or not, but some school districts are saying that to bus like one particular kid from here to there is so costly, they'd rather pay the state fine than the state will fine them if they don't bus the kid. But maybe it's more cost effective to just pay the fine and say, we can't bus this one kid because it's too out of the way.
Yeah. And that's again, part of the issue here. I think that there really needs to be some resolution here, because this is a problem that's not going to go away, and the districts are using the best resources they can find in state law as well as in the community, hiring in contractors and bringing in other people to try to help drive buses. I mean, I talked to a couple of bus drivers in Columbus City Schools, and they are bus driver trainers, but they also are pulled into drive buses quite often because there just aren't enough bus drivers. So they spend all day in the classroom and then they go out and drive the bus. And, you know, these are temporary solutions for a problem that is staying with us and not going away.
So the state, you know, the state needs to take a look at the bus driver shortage as a whole, not even related to this lawsuit.
Yeah. And that's a question certainly for lawmakers who are not coming back until after the election. And whether this will be a top priority for them seems, I mean, they've got a lot that they're going to be dealing with when they come back in lame duck. And I'm not sure that this is going to be high priority at that time, because there are so many other bills that are waiting for some sort of action. And if it doesn't affect you, if it doesn't affect your family, it may not be top of mind. But it does affect, in Columbus alone, around 1,380 kids. And it affects the district, of course, as well. And all of these factors are important to consider. And ideally, you do that before it becomes a crisis. But here we are.
Even if the state throws more money at the problem, that doesn't necessarily mean we'll magically find more bus drivers.
Right, exactly. Because you've got to find people who are willing to do the job. And the folks that I've talked to at the Ohio School Boards Association and other places have said, we've tried to rearrange schedules, make it not a split shift, and make it so that you've got bus drivers who are working for 8 hours straight, and we restock the schedules and move things around. We change bus bell schedules to figure out how to move kids around. And that's another problem that you have here is when you're trying to get mass groups of kids to so many different places all at the same time, because school starts at the same time everywhere, basically.
Within 20 minutes of
And there's been one person I talked to said, you know, we reached out to this one particular non-public school and asked them to change their schedule so that we could better accommodate their students, and they wouldn't do that. So, you know, these are all issues that come into play. And I remember my son was in Westerville schools, and how many calls did we get every morning, not every morning, but many mornings, saying we're going to have late arrival because of our busing situation. There's early release sometimes because of the busing situation. All of these things are potentially affecting kids in the classroom as well.
Yeah, heaven forbid a bus driver has to call in sick.
Right.
Right.
And a bus
breaks down.
And the Ohio School Boards Association surveys districts about their transportation needs. And the latest survey showed around 7% of Ohio's more than 600 school districts said they were fully staffed, had the appropriate number of substitute drivers available. Nearly a third said they needed subs and extra trips to make sure that all kids get to school. And about 9% of districts say that they have no solution, that they are simply in the midst of this bus driver crisis situation, and there's no way to end the shortage that they can see.
All right. Well, we're going to have to keep an eye on the lawsuit. I guess it's a sit and wait now situation.
Yeah, that's the courts move kind of slowly sometimes, but they're really important issues that are being decided.
Right. Well, thank you so much for talking with me about this. And we're going to continue our conversation about public schools transporting private and charter school students in just a moment. This is All Sides with Anna Staver. I'm Amy Jurevich in for Anna today, and we'll be right back.
The candidates for November are set.
I know Donald Trump's type.
Between now and Election Day.
We are not going back.
A campaign season unfolding faster.
Kamala Harris is not getting a promotion.
Than any in recent history.
Make America great again.
Follow it all with new episodes every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast.
You're listening to All Sides, and I'm Amy Jurevich, in for Anna Staver today. We're talking about school transportation. A state law requires public schools to transport private and charter school students. The issue came to a head last week when Attorney General Dave Yost sued Columbus City Schools for failing to follow the law. Pete Japixi is a longtime school transportation consultant. He worked for the Ohio School Boards Association and served as the state director of school transportation, and he joins us now. Welcome to All Sides, Pete.
Good morning.
Thanks for being with us. Now, we were just talking with Karen Kassler from the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau, and we talked pretty extensively about the school bus driver shortage. The shortage, which is happening right now and impacting us, is expected to peak by 2030. Westerville Schools, for example, just the other week had to release students early 2 days in a row, citing transportation issues. So you've been in transportation for a long time. What are you thinking about when you think about the school bus driver shortage?
So I think that the school bus driver shortage is the new real case scenario. I don't think it's temporary. I don't think it's fleeting. It hit us most decidedly during COVID, and we shut down a lot of schools. We stopped running buses. And then as the effects of COVID moved away, what we found were drivers were not coming back to work. Many of them wanted to stay home with their families. And really, the school bus business is no different than what you see in the restaurant business or in the retail market. A lot of folks don't want to go somewhere to work, so they're staying home or they're retiring. So I think we're looking at the new normal, where we're going to have fewer bus drivers, fewer individuals that are interested in hopping in a school bus and putting 30, 40, or 50 children behind them as they navigate the streets and traffic.
And what is I what is the solution to that? How do you get more people wanting to drive a bus?
I don't know that necessarily that's going to be the solution. I think we will always find some bus drivers, some individuals that are interested in doing that. But I think there's two things that we have to think about in order to move forward. One is that, so let's address your question directly. The standards for becoming a school bus driver are very, very high. In all states in the country, these individuals are required to have a commercial driver's license, which requires testing, classroom time, and training that's mandated at a federal level. Here in Ohio, we add to that. Not all states do that, but we have additional training requirements for these folks. So the standards are very high, and we can argue that that's good for the children, that's good for the families, because we're putting class individuals behind the wheel of the bus. But sometimes I think we have to step back and look at the pendulum, and has it swung too far? Maybe we can relax the standards a little bit to help make it easier to get folks into a school bus and driving the wheel. But I think the real answer is that we as school districts figure out how to transport more students on fewer buses. One way of describing that would be, how do we increase our efficiency? You can put more children on fewer buses if you're more careful about scheduling, about determining what time school starts and school ends. You know, in a classic scenario, if you think about old time transportation, especially in the bigger countywide districts, the rural districts, we're used to putting all children on the bus at the same time, grades K through 12, and then they ride really long routes that can be up to 90 minutes long, and then that takes them to school, and then we send them all home at the same time. So the downside of that theory is that we need a seat for every child all at the same time, which means we need a big bus fleet. A more efficient way of running transportation is if we can take the children to school in waves. So if you have 1,000 children all going to school at the same time, you might need 20 buses. Where if you have 1,000 children and you can split them into two groups of 50, then maybe we can do it in 10 buses instead of 20 buses. And so one of the things we have to look at is, how can we schedule schools more carefully so that we can use the bus for 2, 3, 4 in small districts, maybe even 5 trips in the morning and again in the afternoon. So that lets us get the job done with fewer buses, but more importantly in this day and age, with fewer bus drivers.
There are some creative solutions. Columbus City Schools, for example, is partnering with COTA, the public transportation, to give passes to high school students. So just high school students to ride on the COTA bus. Is that a practical solution to involve telling your high school students to ride the public bus?
So that has been a real solution in Ohio for many years. And in fact, it's a solution in states around the country. If you look, for example, in the city of Miami in Florida, the majority of their students are riding public transit down there. So here in Ohio, we have for many, many years allowed, especially the larger cities like Columbus, Cleveland, Cincinnati, Dayton, to use public transport to move students to and from school. Historically, here in Ohio, we were allowed to do that with all students in any grade. Now, a number of years back, the legislature enacted a new law that restricts the use of public transit. So that's actually been taken off the table for cities like Columbus, especially with the elementary students. And so they've lost a certain amount of capacity to transport students because of that. And then it displaces them and puts them on school buses. And so what we're seeing is a need for additional buses and bus drivers in our big cities.
Now, this show was spurred by the state's Attorney General Dave Yost is suing Columbus City Schools because Columbus City Schools deemed it impractical for them to bus about 1,300 non-public school students. What do you think of that lawsuit? Do you think Columbus City Schools is following the law correctly?
I am. To be upfront, I have not been involved in the Columbus case. I know about it because I stay in the business and watch what's going on. But I think we need to take a step back and let's look at what the options are for public school districts. So let me preface this by saying that in 1965, that's when Ohio's General Assembly adopted law that said our public school districts are required to transport students not only to their own schools, but also to the non-public schools. And then we added to that in 1998, when we adopted public charter schools here in the state, as was going on around the country. Our General Assembly also mandated that our public schools have to transport those students. So I want to make an important distinction here. If we look at other states around Ohio, what we do in Ohio is unique.
Oh.
In Indiana, there is no requirement for public schools to transport non-public or community school students. In Kentucky, public schools are only required to transport non-public schools if the non-public school pays the district for that service.
Mm.
In Pennsylvania, every district gets to decide whether they want to do it or not. And in Michigan, public school buses only transport public school students. So what has happened here in Ohio is we have put the onus of transporting all students to any school on our public school districts. And what exacerbates that is they don't necessarily have to go to a school that's open within the public school district. So, for example, a child who lives in Columbus could opt to get educated in a non-public or community school that's in a neighboring community like Westerville or Dublin or Olentangy. The only restriction we have here in Ohio is that they have to be within 30 minutes of their public school of attendance. So
30 minutes is a lot of minutes, right? You can get pretty far in 30 minutes. So, yeah.
Well, you can. The caveat being that keep in mind 30 minutes during rush hour is a whole lot different than 30 minutes on a Saturday morning.
True.
So the reality of how far you can get in 30 minutes at 8 o'clock or 8:30 or a quarter till 9 in the morning when there's lots of vehicles on the road, everybody's going to work, is that it's not as far as you might think. So what's happened, as I understand it, in Columbus, that there are a number of cases where the city has recognized that some of the students they're transporting are actually going more than 30 minutes away. And so under Ohio law, those children actually are not eligible for transportation. That's hard for moms and dads to understand, especially when their child's been riding a bus for the last 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years. And then all of a sudden the city recognizes, whoops, we did not have to do this.
Right.
And
that's,
the other thing
that Columbus City Schools is saying that they've bused these kids, even if it was more than 30 minutes for years, they agree, but they're saying they're taking the part of the law and using it this time to say, you know, the law says we don't have to, and it's impractical.
Yep. Well, so let's separate that because there's two parts to the law. One is there are some students that are not eligible. Not eligible would be defined as being more than 30 minutes away.
Okay.
The second part of the law that has been in existence since the General Assembly put this in place is that some students can be determined to be impractical to transport. So the bottom line on impractical to transport, as it was originally defined by the General Assembly, is it's unnecessary or unreasonable. So unreasonable is perhaps a word that's easier to comprehend than impractical. And so that would be a case where you've got one or two or three children wanting to go to school. And it's not reasonable for a school district to have to put a large 65 or 72 passenger bus out there just to transport two or three children.
Mm.
So I think, Amy, one of the things we have to keep in mind here is that there are school districts like Columbus that have been transporting these students for years, and they've been able to do it because they've had the capacity to do that. What has changed drastically is two things. One is costs have gone up. they've gone up much, much, much quicker than we've kept up with funding and with tax bases. For example, in school year 21-22, it cost almost $1,300 per student per year to transport them. Whereas if you wind that back to 1975-76, we could do it for $70 a year. Mm. So that cost has gone up almost 2,000%. So we're looking at how much does it cost to keep the bus on the road, to insure it, to maintain it. But the other significant thing that's happening, and it's not just in Columbus, it's all across Ohio, it's across the country, is we no longer have enough bus drivers to drive all these buses. So what these school districts, and many of them are in the same boat, are having to do is say, okay, we have limited resources. How do we use those resources as effectively as possible? And where are there areas where we do not have to bus children? And unfortunately, they're having to make the tough decision to say, okay, some children just aren't going to get a bus anymore.
Right. And I mean, the costs are a lot. We asked Columbus City Schools about the cost, and Columbus City Schools says it does not routinely track the cost of transporting private and charter school students, but they figure that the figure they provided to us is that they allocated $15.7 million to bus private and charter school students. And the total spent from that was about $10.7 million. So we're talking a lot of money.
We are talking about a lot of money. And I will tell you that in 2020, I was working with a study group that was doing some presentations for the General Assembly and members of the legislature. And so one of the things I did at the time was we surveyed school districts across the state with the goal of trying to figure out what's the cost differential. How much more does it cost to transport a non-public or a community school student than a traditional public school student? So let's explain for just a moment, why would it cost more? The way the laws and the requirements are set up in the state is that a public school, for example, Columbus, has no control over the bell times, the opening and closing times of the non-public or the community schools. They also have no control of the attendance boundaries. So a public school district can say, okay, XYZ elementary school, all the students will be collected from within a finite boundary. Whereas for the non-public or the community schools, it can be district-wide. So what that means is to transport students to one of these non-public community schools, you now have a bus that has to travel essentially through the whole school district picking up students. And there won't be as many students going, which means we're going to put fewer students on the bus than if we could send it out to pick up, for example, a busload of junior high students and take them to one of Columbus's junior high buildings. That drastically increases the cost. So what I discovered in 2020 working with school district is that it cost the district on average 3.5 times more than the cost of a public school student to take someone to a non-public school. And if we look at community schools, the factor is 2.5 times. And it really all boils down to the fact that these students don't live in a collection area. So you have to travel much more distance with fewer kids on the bus. And that bus is going to cost you $65,000, $70,000 a year to run, whether you have one student on there or 50 students on there. So Columbus's numbers are not at all surprising what they've shared with you. The cost to transport the non-pub and the community school kids is drastic.
And I guess one final question before I let you go. Is it possible to change the way we look at the busing? Can we use vans that maybe don't require as much training as driving a bus that holds 70 students? Is that a way to fix this, or is that just kind of a band-aid and makes it more complicated?
Well, I think we have to talk about the safety component here. If you look at the design and the construction of school buses and all the features that are involved in them, school bus, and it doesn't take too long at all to uncover the facts and the history and school bus crashes. Yes, there are crashes. We had a tragic one in Ohio not too long ago. However, at the end of the day, a child is 20 times safer on a school bus than they are in a passenger vehicle. So vans can roll over, cars can crash. Unfortunately, if you look at the fatal accident statistics that are published and maintained by the feds, we lose many, many, many children every year in vans and car crashes going to and from school. So children are much safer inside of a school bus than they are in another vehicle. So we could deregulate. We could say, okay, we can run passenger cars in vans. And in fact, to be honest, we do use vans in some cases. Mm-hmm. In public education, especially with special needs children, where we need to get into somebody's driveway to pick a child up. But to say, let's open this up and put vans and cars on the road for transport students, unfortunately, we're going to see a loss of life if we do that.
Well, thank you so much for your time. That is Pete Japixi, and he is a longtime school transportation consultant. Thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thank you for having me.
And we're going to continue discussing school transportation and the driving of private school students. State Senator Andrew Brenner joins us next. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.
The candidates for November are set.
I know Donald Trump's type.
Between now and Election Day.
We are not going back.
A campaign season unfolding faster.
Kamala Harris is not getting a promotion.
Than any in recent history.
Make America great again.
Follow it all with new episodes every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm Amy Jurevich. I'm sitting in for Anna Staver today. And we're talking about school transportation. Should public schools be required to bus private school students, even if driving those buses is deemed impractical? With us in the studio is State Senator Andrew Brenner, who chairs the Senate Education Committee, and he has sponsored or supported school choice bills over the last decade. Welcome back to All Sides, Senator.
Thank you very much for having me.
So when you heard about Attorney General Dave Yost suing Columbus City Schools over them not transporting private school students, the school district deemed driving those students impractical, what were your initial thoughts of the lawsuit?
Well, I immediately posted on social media congratulating him for doing that because he should sue them. I think they're coming up with one excuse after another, and they're doing this because they're basically a monopoly, and I think that they can do this and get these kids to return back. In fact, I believe one of the school board members, even or one or two of them, even suggested that is a possibility. Columbus Public, so here's some facts. In 2014-2015, Columbus had 50,479 students. In 2023-2024, that had fallen to 45,397 students. That's a 10% decline. So there are fewer students in the district. So this idea that they're busting at the seams for their buses is a little bit bizarre to me. Your last guest actually gave me some information because he suggested that the cost for Columbus Public to transport non-public and community schools is about $15 million a year. Well, Columbus received $28.9 million from the state this year to transport kids for non-public students. So they are also sitting on a carryover of $245 million in cash out of their billion-dollar budget. So this idea that they can't find bus drivers or that they can't do some things to me seems to be a little bit ludicrous considering that they've been given a large chunk of money from the state of Ohio directly for transportation.
But they they cannot, there is a bus driver shortage. I mean, it's not just Columbus City Schools. The entire state doesn't Correct. Have enough bus drivers. And it's not just a money problem. You can't throw money at the problem. You can't make people want to drive a bus.
But this is also the logistics hub probably for the Midwest is Columbus. And yet there are plenty of truck drivers and others. And my point is that if you've got plenty of cash, you can pay more bus drivers more money and you can get more bus drivers to be able to do that. And in this case, to declare 1,300 kids impractical, did they apply that same standard to the traditional kids that go to Columbus Public? All these kids that were declared impractical are only kids of school choice for the most part. I don't know of any kids that were declared impractical in the city of Columbus because of the same criteria that they were using for all the kids. So and additionally, like I said, they lost 10% of their kids over the last 7 or 8 years.
But they lost way more than 10% of their bus drivers.
But again, they've got the money that they can go hire more bus drivers. In other words, they can pay more money and they can hire more bus drivers.
So you think paying people, you know, even $5, $10 more an hour is going to make them want to have that split shift and be responsible for 70 kids sitting behind them? I mean, it is driving a bus is not necessarily an easy and like light job.
Well, we could say that, but we can also say that, for instance, Columbus Public has, 118 school buildings that they have failed to consolidate. If they were to do that, they would probably be able to eliminate enough extra buildings to be able to do a different hub and spoke system mm-hmm. and have more efficient bus routes. But if you have 118 school buildings last I saw from the data was, official data was, I think, around 43,000 kids in fiscal year 23. If you've got 43,000 kids in fiscal year 23, and you know even if you adjusted 1,000 or two over the last couple of years, you've got plenty of room there to be able to adjust for that. And I just don't understand their argument that they can't do this. They argue, okay, there's the Ed Choice scholarships are taking money. No, it's not. Ed Choice are paid directly from the state of Ohio, so none of that comes out of Columbus Public's funding. But let's take a look at Columbus Public's funding. They're spending total operational expenditures per student per pupil in Columbus Public in fiscal year 23 was $24,466. Dayton was $22,700. Olentangy, which is the higher wealth district, total operational expenditures per pupil was $13,734 for 21,841 students in fiscal year 23. Versus 43,114 students in fiscal year 23 for Columbus Public. My question is, why aren't they using their economies of scale more efficiently? Olentangy has 28 buildings for those same 22,000 kids versus 118 or 117 buildings for Columbus Public. Again, this is a management problem with Columbus Public. If they reorganized their district and went with a better hub and spoke system, even did what the one board member suggested, which is, yeah, let's close a bunch of the buildings, consolidate, build some new ones. Then you could put in more efficient bus delivery systems, and you probably wouldn't need as many buses.
All right. Well, closing schools, moving around schools, you know, closing schools and building new schools, that's going to take years. But let's talk about right now. So right now we have Columbus saying that there's about 1,300 students that go to private schools that they are not going to bus because it's more than 30 minutes of the drive. It gets down to the idea of, should public schools be transporting students who take a voucher and or not, either way, and choose to go to a private school? Should that be required, that the public school transport a student? Because it's a school choice state, right? So you can pick to send your student wherever they want to go to school. But should the public district, Columbus or otherwise, have to drive them?
They've been doing it for 30 years. And because of economies of scale, that's why we have that set up that way. They're much more efficient and should be much more efficient being able to transport those students. And we have given them lots of alternatives. The fact that Columbus and a couple of other school districts are now doing mass removal of kids, to me, this is a deliberate attempt to eliminate competition. This is not impractical. It could be poor management on their part.
Well, the transportation consultant that we had on in the last segment, he said that Ohio has different standards than all of the surrounding states, India and Kentucky. He cited Pennsylvania, where each district gets to pick whether they transport students or not. Michigan only has to transport public school students. Why did Ohio decide to be the outlier here and require the transportation of private school students?
You'd have to ask the politicians from 30 years plus ago. This has been going on for decades, way before I've been in the General Assembly. So this is the way we've been doing it. We've been funding, like I said, Columbus Public is getting about $30 million a year in funding for transportation. So they've got money available to go hire buses or come up with alternatives. And what the code says is the cost of providing transportation in terms of equipment, maintenance, personnel, administration, whether similar or equivalent services provided for students. Your last guest suggested that the safest way to transport a kid is on a school bus. But then in turn, the city of Columbus has just removed 1,300 kids from being able to transport on school buses, putting them in a situation which is probably not as safe as the school bus. But not only that, Columbus is a high poverty school district, which is why they have more revenue per student. They get, in fact, $10,200 per student in aid as of 2 years ago of in state aid for every student. That's more money in state aid than an EdChoice voucher is for a kid that goes, and that's for a kid that goes to a private school of their choice, which is $8,500 per student. Those same parents, though, are paying property taxes, whether they send their kids to Columbus Public or to any other school. The school choice options, such as community schools, are public schools. They accept all kids as well. Mm-hmm. So those kids are also being declared impractical to transport. So, I'm not buying this idea.
Okay, well, what about the fact that Columbus City Schools transport students to 94 private schools? And all of the 94 of those private schools that all have the exact same start time and end time. So what if, can the district ask them to maybe alter their start time or end time a little bit? Is that to make transportation easier?
I've talked to the community schools. All of them have to adjust. They're adjusting during the day. They're adjusting during the week. For instance, over the last several years, Columbus Public would say, okay, we're going to pick up your kids and we're going to transport them. But in that morning, they wouldn't have the bus, so they wouldn't transport them. So the local community school would have to contact all the parents and say, you now have to drop your kids off this morning. Or during the middle of the school day, the exact opposite. They had the buses to pick them up in the morning and would drop them off, but in the afternoon wouldn't have them there to pick them up to take them home. So then the school would have to reach out to those families to get their parents to show up. You'd have backups on Bethel Road there for a couple mm-hmm. of the community schools sitting over there.
So the thinking used to be that if a parent chooses to send their child to a private school, then it was their responsibility to transport them there. That was the thinking for a long time. And that was exercising their school choice. So what changed? Why did it change that it was decided that transportation should be included?
Well, again, that happened 30, 40 years ago. That happened way before I was in the General Assembly. It's been going on. And again, the state covers the cost of those transportation. And if your consultant said that it's costing $15 million to transport the kids and the state is giving them $28 million, there's a $13 million difference. But not only that, they're spending $24,500 per student in Columbus Public. So there's plenty of money there to be able to hire additional transportation options, additional bus drivers. And yes, they can find, there's plenty of people out there. There was also a comment made earlier about how long the students may ride on a school bus. I remember when I was a kid, our school bus ride was anywhere from 45 minutes to an hour because it was a rural school system. This idea that kids can't be on a school bus for a longer period of time doesn't make sense to me either, because that goes on in every single rural school system in the state of Ohio. I remember my sister, I think she was on the school bus one way an hour and a half, because you'd have to get from where we were to where the middle school was on the other side of the county. So they can make changes to how they're handling it. And there's plenty of computer software and programs. these school choice schools, we've set deadlines so that the traditional public school knows where these kids are going ahead of time so that they can be prepared to adjust that in their buses and everything else for the routing. And they can set that up. Again, getting back also the fact that if Columbus had done a better job of managing their district and consolidating the buildings, they wouldn't need to have a lot of these problems today.
Understood, but that's not going to change overnight. And so what needs to happen is there needs to be more school bus drivers now. It's not just Columbus City Schools' problem.
Well, I'm not disagreeing with that, but again, in general, there are fewer students today all over the state of Ohio going to traditional public schools than there were just 5 and 10 years ago. The numbers have actually declined. There are a lot more people homeschooling. There are a lot of people sending their kids to other schools that don't take any state funding.
Well, we're gonna have to leave it there. But there's definitely more to talk about. We've been talking about public schools being required to bus private school students, and you've been listening to State Senator Andrew Brenner. Thank you for listening to All Sides today. I'm Amy Jurevich, in for Anna Staver. This is 89.7 NPR News.